is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The headlines from the Financial Times. Can Nigeria's brain drain be reversed? Subhead. Worsening security and economic stagnation have seen many scrambling for the exits. The statistics published by the Pew study recently in 2019 say that 45% of the adults in Nigeria plan to emigrate within 5 years. Well, we're 3 years into that, so we can expect the emigration is underway. At the same time, there's a presidential contest in Nigeria in the winter of 23. And I welcome Gregory Copley, of editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who has recently returned from Nigeria, to help us understand this contest, especially in context of the brain drain. Nigeria is said to have 33% unemployment. It's also very expensive to feed yourself in Nigeria. The large city, the large port city of Lagos, to my view of photographs taken recently, is one great big traffic jam around the airport. The capital, Abuja, is in the center of the country. And I can say that having looked at those photographs, it looks a lot easier to drive around in, but that isn't necessarily a good thing. Gregory, a very good evening to you. Your measure of this presidential contest, does it answer this brain drain concern that the Financial Times posts in London? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, as we keep discussing, to get your information about Africa from either the Financial Times or the Economist is like, going off into dreamland. The mainstream media's reporting on Africa, as with much of the world, is based on mini probes into urban areas of these countries, and you need to get into the broader view of all the African countries to understand what's going on. The brain drain has been underway for a long time because you've had a lot of educated Nigerians getting their degrees and then staying abroad where they can make more money, but they're repatriating large amounts of money back into the country, and actually increasingly a lot of the educated Nigerians are reinvesting in their own country, either personally or financially or personally. So the situation in Nigeria is very, very different from the world's reporting on it. Yes, the February 25th elections next year are going to be critical, largely because the incumbent, former General Muhammadu Buhari, cannot run for another term in office. And most Nigerians are breathing a sigh of relief over that, because he has been remarkably unproductive and vindictive in his personal approach to governance. He's been indecisive and vindictive, and two of the great qualities you don't want to see in a leader. Now, the Financial Times and The Economist have been pushing the candidacy of a chap called Peter Obi, the Labour Party candidate for the presidency next year. And they think he's the great hope. He's a young fellow. He is dynamic. He is intelligent. And he has a lot of support among the urban youth, particularly in Lagos and some of the other southern and southeastern cities. He has zero support among the north and the older people throughout the country. Yes, he's doing well on social media, but who's got this social media? These are the urban youth in places like Lagos. The interesting thing is that the consensus among most people in city and rural areas in Nigeria is that Peter Obi is great for stirring up debate on issues, but he is going nowhere in the election. He is not one of the main contenders. This reminds me of how the British media looked at the transition from Rhodesia to Zimbabwe when they organized, after the Lancaster House Agreement and the like, they organized elections in Zimbabwe, or Rhodesia, Zimbabwe, as it was then. And they all backed, the UK media and the Western media all backed these wonderfully educated urban individuals. Remember, it was Bishop Muzarewa and Reverend Sithole, who were regarded as these highly enlightened, logical candidates for leadership in Zimbabwe, in independent Zimbabwe. Of course, neither of them got a fraction, even a small fraction of the vote, because the majority of the population voted with their cultural and ethnic alliances. So you had the vote being split between the Ndebele and the Shona. And the Shona were the most populous ethnic group in the country, so their candidate, Robert Mugabe, won. Well, it's going to be the same thing in Nigeria. We're going to see more mainstream candidates reflecting more of their societies. So the race is going to be between Bola Tinubu, who was the former governor of Lagos State, and Atiku Abubakar, who's a northerner who was vice president of the country under the Obasanjo presidency. And frankly, Atiku is the man to beat. He has all of the credentials, and he's got all of the energy. And he actually, now that he's not under the Obasanjo presidency, is starting to come out with policies and thinking which is far more national. And he's billing himself quite rightly as the only Nigerian candidate for the race. He's not representing special interests. He's not representing one particular area, although he comes from the north and he is a Muslim. He's got a Christian southern running mate. But Bola Tinubu is seen as the, you know, as being essentially the corrupt former governor of Lagos State. Now, despite the fact that the United States has done a huge deal with Lagos State to build a new $500 million consulate general in Lagos, the reality is that it looks as though the State Department has come down on the side of thinking that Atiku Abubakar is the man who will win the election and represent the best hope for U.S. and Western interests in Nigeria going forward. And Atiku is very dynamic. He's also reasonable, and he actually listens when policy advice has been put to him. And it's not all about, you know, who can make the most money. In fact, he's, I think, doing a great job with minimal input in terms of donations from people who want to get post-election favors.
Gregory, because the energy story is dominating the news in Europe and the United States, Nigeria's gift from the heavens is its light sweet crude, the oil that is necessary for civilization to maintain itself. It's the best of all oils. Is that a challenge for leadership in Abuja to deal with that bounty? Is that the source of the division that we've witnessed these last decades in Nigeria?
Well, one of the things we can say with some certainty is that the discovery of oil in Nigeria, or the exploitation of oil in Nigeria, led to a total distortion of the Nigerian economy. People thought that they could somehow ride the gravy train of oil, the rent-seeking, if you like, on the oil revenues. And so a lot of states abandoned their support for agriculture and the like, and just waited for the handouts from the oil revenues. Well, in 2022, what we're seeing is that some 90% of the oil revenues are being diverted through corruption away from the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation, and therefore not getting into the hands of the state's governments and down to the people. So the Nigerian economy has grown up almost without reference to oil these past couple of years. And so there's been a greater re-emphasis on manufacturing and, of course, on agriculture, which is the traditional mainstay of life in Nigeria. So that is coming back into its own. And one of the things Atiku will do, almost without doubt, is to dramatically reduce the amount of corruption, which is taking the revenues away from the oil and gas sector. But he will also open up investment, foreign direct investment, into other areas of the economy, particularly in other mineral exploitation, particularly iron ore and the steel manufacturing. Nigeria will ramp up from being a light manufacturer to a heavy industry manufacturing economy. But he's also got to address the question of security because of the rise of gangsterism and jihadism, which has been allowed to flourish literally under the last 8 years of the Buhari administration.
And what of the brain drain? Is there a remedy for that? Is that a concern for any new president?
It is, and particularly now when under Buhari's peculiar form of leadership, we see strikes in most of the universities, the state and federally funded universities and other schools. So you've had a gap in the educational output of graduates in Nigeria. So there's an increasing call for Nigerians abroad to come back and participate in the economy. Now, it is the biggest economy in Africa, as well as being the biggest population in Africa. So Nigeria has a lot to attract back its brain drain expatriates. And I think that's starting to happen. And I think it certainly will happen even more as we see corruption diminish over the coming years in Nigeria, the diversity of the economy becoming more apparent. Already, Lagos is the New York of Africa. It is a massive state. There's been a lot of new development. The old images of traffic jams are still there, but you've got entirely new areas of commercial and residential development in Lagos and in other cities, which are, you know, world class. So you can go back from, you know, a nice lifestyle in a major city in Europe or the United States and come back to a beautiful home and surroundings and secure surroundings in communities within Nigerian cities. Even today, it's very impressive out there.
Speaking with Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, just returned from Nigeria. We turn to the Horn of Africa next. I'm John Batchelor.